This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The opioid epidemic has become the deadliest drug crisis in American history. It stems from prescription drugs and impacts people regardless of their socioeconomic status. North Carolina is one of the states hit hardest by this scourge, which is both a health care and a law enforcement challenge. The President's Commission on Combating Drug Addiction and the Opioid Crisis recently released initial recommendations with a final report expected this fall. Governor Roy Cooper is a member of that commission, and before we talk about this with members of the medical and law enforcement community, we spend some time with Governor Cooper. Thanks for joining us, Governor. Nice to have you with us.
Glad to be with you, Mike. This is such a critical issue right now.
I mentioned that this epidemic is considered a medical and a law enforcement issue. Is this an indication that we're changing our approach to the war on drugs, or is this simply because of how this addiction seems to originate in the doctor's office as opposed to in back alleys?
Well, I think it's some of both. I mean, law enforcement has realized that we have to keep going after the drug traffickers and the drug kingpins and those who would try to import heroin and synthetic fentanyl, these opioids that kill people, into our state and our country. But law enforcement also realizes that we cannot arrest our way out of this problem. People who have substance use disorder have significant medical problems that have to be dealt with treatment. And I'm pleased that we have, in North Carolina, been able to release a multi-step approach to this problem that includes involvement of law enforcement. I understand you're going to hear from Chief Bashore of the Nashville, North Carolina Police Department. He'll tell you about Project Hope, where they're having people who come in who are addicted, and they are saying, we're not going to arrest you. We're going to make sure you get into treatment. And law enforcement is understanding this, that we have to get people treatment, that this vicious cycle of emergency room overdose to jail, back out again, another overdose, doesn't work. And law enforcement diversion to treatment and prevention is working, and we've got statistical proof that it is.
We're working
together on that.
North Carolina ranks 10th in the nation in the number of citizens caught up in all of this. What do you suppose the reason for that is? Why do we rank so high?
Well, I think it's a problem all over the country. I was just with governors and from all of the country, and most all of them recognize this as a crisis. And yes, North Carolina is right there with some of the rest of them. We've had 13,000 people die from opioid overdose since 1999, and we're having four die a day. So what we know we need to do is to get people treated and to make sure that we emphasize prevention and the widespread use of naloxone, which is a life-saving drug that helps people, it literally brings them back to life.
Yeah, it's the antidote.
They overdose.
Mm-hmm. You're a member of the President's Commission that I talked about at the very beginning of this program. They have suggested a number of steps to take, among them increasing treatment under Medicaid. If this epidemic crosses all socioeconomic lines, why is Medicaid necessary?
Well, we need more people with health care coverage. And if you kick people off of health care coverage, you're going to have fewer people who have access to treatment. So expansion of Medicaid coverage to people, and particularly when the federal government will pay for most all of it, then the state should make sure that it accepts that. And this national group is recommending that the president issue a state of emergency, which would allow waivers to expand Medicaid for treatment, which we think is important. And we have to remember that a lot of the blame is in with the pharmaceutical companies and the medical community, which let prescription opioid abuse get out of hand. I talked to so many people who began getting hooked on opioids from a simple injury that they might have had or an operation that they had. These drugs are so very powerful and are so gripping, and getting people off of them is a physical nightmare. The withdrawal symptoms are tragic for people. So this is an issue that all of us have to pull together, the pharmaceutical companies, medical community, the law enforcement community, the healthcare community, our community groups, families. Most of the kids who are starting with opioids get them from their parents' home or their grandparents' home or a friend's home, where people just casually keep these very powerful opioids in the medicine cabinet. And studies are showing that parents are talking to their kids about street drugs and alcohol, but not about prescription drugs. And that has to change, because these drugs can kill you, maybe even more of a chance for that to happen than with street drugs.
I want to go back to the Medicaid situation, because as you well know, one of the reasons that the Affordable Care Act is not working well in certain states is because those states did not accept the expansion of Medicaid under that program, and North Carolina is one of them. And your predecessor, Governor McCrory, told me several times on this program his reasoning for not taking that extra money for Medicaid was the fact that there was a sunset provision and they didn't know what it was going to cost the state once the federal government stopped contributing to the expansion of Medicaid. So in a state like North Carolina, whose legislature has said, no, we're not going to do this under Obamacare, what's the likelihood of being able to expand it under the president's commission that you're a member of?
Well, I still think there's a chance for North Carolina to expand. Republican House legislators have introduced Carolina Cares, which is a North Carolina-tailored plan to accept the federal money to expand health care coverage. I support it. A number of legislators support it. We can get more people treated for their substance abuse addictions through this. And it's pretty clear that there is strong support across the country, because even with a Republican president and a Republican Congress and U.S. Senate, they still could not turn back the Medicaid coverage that had already been put across the country. North Carolina has the opportunity to accept billions of dollars, which will help particularly our rural economy, provide tens of thousands of health care jobs, get more people covered, and particularly can help us address this opioid crisis. And we can do it in a way that most all of it is federal money, and the other part of it can come from healthcare providers like hospitals in North Carolina, so that no state tax money goes toward it. This is a layup. It is something that we should have done several years ago, but there's still an opportunity to do it. And this opioid crisis puts this issue in the forefront.
I only have another minute
don't
left.
Don't have medical insurance, they're not going to be able to get the treatment that they need.
I only have another minute left with you, Governor, and I wanted to ask you about this, because part of this problem is that it may start with a prescription drug, but then if the prescription runs out or the doctor refuses to fill it, people are now turning to street versions of these drugs, and they're cheaper in many cases and many cases more lethal. What can be done about that?
Well, that is a problem, because now it's more difficult to get prescription drugs, because we passed laws to make it more difficult to write these prescriptions. We encouraged pharmaceutical companies, and I've even pushed pharmaceutical companies through lawsuits and to make sure that they reduce, make it harder for people to get addicted to these painkillers. But they're also becoming more expensive on the street, and people are turning to heroin and fentanyl, which are opioids that are extremely dangerous. It comes back to prevention and treatment. We have to make sure that people are treated and that they get the treatment that they need to get off of these drugs. Prevention and treatment work. We just got to provide the support and to make sure that people get it. And that's the way to reduce this problem of overdose. It affects people across the income spectrum, people of all races. It affects Republicans and Democrats. It requires a bipartisan, strong solution. and we all need to work on it together.
Governor Roy Cooper, a member of the President's Commission on Combating Drug Addiction and the Opioid Crisis, thank you for joining us, and feel free to come back whenever you'd like.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
You're very welcome, sir. Nice. Thank you. Nice to talk to you. Officials recognize the opioid epidemic as both, as I said, a medical and a law enforcement problem. So we spend the rest of the hour with representatives from both fields. Dr. Stephen Wyatt is Medical Director of Addiction Medicine at Carolina's Healthcare System. Welcome back to the program.
Good morning, Mike.
And Detective Paul Fushi is CMPD, where he has been with Vice and Narcotics since 1993, working predominantly on heroin cases as an undercover officer. Welcome back to you.
Thank you.
And as the governor alluded to a moment ago, although these gentlemen are in our Spirit Square studio, joining us by phone is Thomas Beshore. He's the chief of police for the Nashville, North Carolina Police Department, which has started a program called the HOPE Initiative, aimed at helping addicts beat opioid addiction. He joins us by phone. Welcome, sir.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. We have a detective and a police chief with us on this panel. Let me repeat a question I asked the governor a moment ago. We have a lot of people locked away in America on drug charges. Law enforcement has said, as the governor pointed out, we cannot arrest ourselves out of this problem, this opioid addiction problem. Why are we taking a different approach to this in the fight against this drug addiction as opposed to drugs and drug offenders who have come before? Let me talk to the Vice Squad gentleman here, Paul Fushi.
This heroin became far more popular when black tar heroin really came across from the West back in the early 2000s. And we saw a jump in heroin use after that. Since then, since about 2014-15, the use has even gone greater with the bringing in of the fentanyl crisis, so to speak. Charlotte has been sort of fortunate. If you read New York Times, just had an article, the 300-500% increase in overdoses nationwide. It's stark. North Carolina has been sort of insulated from the states like up in the New England area, the Midwest, because of the favorite usage being black tar heroin, which is a very different type of heroin than the powder. The powder is more easily to use to put in the fentanyl. Now we're seeing more and more people, addicts, they'll go to a stronger product. So we're now seeing more use of the fentanyl. And a lot of times they don't realize it's fentanyl that they're using. And it's, you're talking about a product that's 50 times more potent.
But I don't think you're answering my question. It's a different approach. Law enforcement has said now, and I'll bring Thomas Beshore into this as well, but law enforcement has said we can't arrest ourselves out of this problem. We got a lot of people in prison because they had a joint in their pocket. So what's the difference?
The difference with the approach we take now?
Yeah.
For one thing, fentanyl has increased our overdoses usages. Fentanyl is a totally lab-oriented made narcotic, opiate, morphine, as opposed to heroin. Laws have to change as far as how we approach the locking up people for fentanyl-based use.
Why?
Because fentanyl is totally man-made. It is not covered under some of the Schedule I. Fentanyl is totally man-made. And the governor's own bill that just passed is very good at making sure that a lot of these the chemicals involved in fentanyl are all made illegal, and it's more easy to prosecute.
We have to take a break. I'll come back and get your point of view on this, Thomas Beshore, in just a moment. And we'll also talk to Dr. Stephen Wyatt, Medical Director of Carolina's Healthcare System. It's Charlotte Talks. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Aldersgate, 231 acres of senior living in the heart of Charlotte, featuring cottage homes, apartments, and villas. Details at aldersgateexpansion.com. And Central Piedmont Community College's Computer Technology Institute, offering IT career planning and skills training for professionals. Details at cpcc.edu/IT career. Well, on Tuesday, the Trump administration officially announced that it is ending the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program created by the Obama administration. DACA shielded about 800,000 young undocumented immigrants who came here with their parents as children. This state has the 7th highest number of these so-called dreamers in the nation. So we're going to look at what this may mean for them, what leaders are saying, and what's next tomorrow on this program at 9.
I'm Tom Asbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, in the wake of Hurricane Harvey, calls for a Green New Deal to brace the nation for natural disasters ahead. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
That's On Point this morning from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte talks with Mike Collins on listener-funded public radio 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the opioid addiction problem, which is some would like to have it declared a national emergency, with Dr. Stephen Wyatt, medical director of Carolina's healthcare system, Detective Paul Fouché with Vice and Narcotics at CMPD, and Thomas Beshore, who is the chief of police in Nashville, North Carolina. But you were also on the Vice detail with the, I can't remember the name of the city. You worked just before you came to Nashville.
Yes, I was. Rocky Mount. Rocky Mount, yes.
You were on the Vice Squad at Rocky Mount. So this is this a problem in Rocky Mount as well?
Yes, I mean, it's indicative of being a problem everywhere in
okay.
the United States right now.
So let me ask you this question, because, and I'll be more obvious with the answer. A lot of people think that we have taken a shift in our approach to this drug and this addiction problem, saying that we can't arrest ourselves out of this addiction problem, because quite honestly, it affects white people in the suburbs as opposed to black people in the inner city who have been arrested en masse for various forms of possession, usage, and sale of other drugs, not this one. But what I'm hearing from Paul Fouché is that part of the problem here is that this is not on the schedule of drugs that can be prosecuted. Is that the real reason we're taking this different approach, or are we more enlightened now and have come to realize that addiction is a medical problem and not a crime problem?
Yeah, I think, at least from my perspective, I think that it is a shift in a realization from the law enforcement standpoint that, you know, the cycle that we have tried and failed at quite literally in the past of arresting someone for possession of a drug, taking them to the magistrate, putting them in jail, you know, many times those individuals get out before the paperwork's done and repeat that same cycle over and over again, was not going to win the war on drugs. And so law enforcement, I think, has really done a good job as far as, you know, realizing and maybe a little late but to the game, but at least we're realizing now that we do have to take a different approach and you know, understand that addiction to drugs are a disease, a brain disease, and we have to work on doing our part.
And Dr. Wyatt, I would think that you agree with that, being in the business that you're in, that this is an approach we should have been taking all along?
I do. There's no question that, that the reducing the availability makes a difference,
sure.
No question. So trying to reduce that in some ways is always helpful. But at the same time, when you're actually dealing with someone that has addiction, addiction begins to drive behavior, no question. So the salience for the drug is profound, and the downregulation within the brain to consider risks in getting the drug or using the drug and what it's doing to your family or whatever is reduced dramatically in a way that people do things that they would never do.
So go after the pusher, the person selling these things, but not the person addicted to them. Get them help. Is that the new approach?
Yes, but I'd be reticent to – a lot of people don't get help until they're forced to get help.
Right.
And so – it's uncomfortable to say, but sometimes sending a person to jail is effective in getting them at least their foot in the door for some type of assistance and helping.
And Dr. Wyatt, you were on this program, I think, in the spring of last year, 2016, talking about this very problem. Has the magnitude of the problem changed at all since then?
It hasn't gotten any better. It's leveled off to a degree. We aren't seeing quite the rise that we were seeing, you know, 2, 3, 4 years ago. But and that's partly to do with some of the things that have been brought up already, that mm-hmm. there's more recognition within the medical community to look at the prescribing of opioids, and it's something that CHS has been very involved in some interesting projects.
More people, I'm told, die from drug overdoses than from car accidents and gun homicides combined.
Mm-hmm.
2 years ago, 27 million Americans reported current use of illegal drugs. 27 million reported current use of illegal drugs or the abuse of prescription drugs. And in the case of opioids, the addiction often begins with a legitimate prescription drug because they have a need for pain medication. But in many cases, it's spread to the streets and to drugs like heroin and fentanyl, which are then often combined with the cocaine or with cocaine or other drugs. And that means there is an underlying problem across the country, across all socioeconomic groups, driving people to take these drugs, to medicate themselves. Has that problem been addressed, or is anybody addressing that problem, the underlying causes of all this?
Mm-hmm. Yes, they are. We are. there's a variety of things that are going on around prevention, and it's something that, again, we're trying to address here in Charlotte, looking at what children are most susceptible genetically and from their environment. Adverse childhood events is a huge issue, that is physical, emotional, sexual abuse and neglect of children. And certainly added to the problems that really started in the late 80s and through the 90s, and that was the drive by a variety of government programs to address pain more effectively mm-hmm. was part of the increase in availability of opioids, because it was one thing we could do very rapidly and take care of the problem, we thought. At the same time, there are specific individuals that have a propensity towards opioids. Many people will take them, they get nauseated and they sedated and they take them for a couple of days and they don't want to take them anymore. Other people, it lights up their world. Along with what took place in the medical community, we also have had significant social problems that have resulted in people wanting to get some kind of release rapidly from whatever problems. You bring up gunshot wounds and motor vehicle accidents. What's interesting is that a significant number of gunshot wounds and motor vehicle accidents are secondary to alcohol and other drugs.
Right.
We've made huge changes in the safety of cars, but the significant number of accidents that take place that are as a result of alcohol and other drugs really is what keeps it still, you know, a prominent problem.
And Detective, you've been a detective with CMPD, I think, for 24 years or thereabouts. Have you seen an uptick in the drug problem or a change in how the drug problem has, the characteristics of the drug problem have morphed over time?
Oh, yeah. But when I came in, it was crack cocaine was more popular, and the dangers there were the dangers of violence associated with the business. Here it's the actual drug that's causing the death, which is a little bit different. And also we associate the fentanyl problem with heroin users a lot. We have 27 overdose deaths so far in Charlotte. It's more than that, but I'm only giving you what the medical examiner has come
this,
back.
This year?
Correct.
So it's about half of the homicide rate.
You would know I'm not sure the homicide numbers. You're probably on target. But the important thing is this. Of those 27 deaths, only I believe 8 of them had involvement with heroin, was a mixture of heroin. We're finding more mixtures with cocaine, methamphetamine, other types of drugs. Okay. So the fentanyl thing is opening itself not just heroin use to other users. So your field of people using could be far greater than just the heroin, the person who uses heroin that we think of.
And Chief Bashir, you're in Nashville. That's with an N. Nashville, North Carolina. It's, I think, to the east of Greensboro and to the west of Rocky Mount on Highway 64. How big a town is Nashville? How big is your opioid problem there?
So that's correct. That's where we're located. The town of Nashville has about 5,400 residents. And so the problem here is the same problem we see everywhere. I mean, it's the individuals who are committing those crimes that are associated with supporting their drug habits, breaking into cars, breaking into homes, shoplifting, those kind of crimes. I think across the board, police departments and communities are seeing a rise in that, especially over the last, 18 to 20 months.
And prior to that, as I mentioned, prior to your employment in Nashville, you were in Rocky Mount. How does the drug problem and the nature of the drug problem that you're witnessing as a police chief there differ from what you witnessed as a vice person in Rocky Mount?
Well, I think that, again, like Paul was saying, I mean, when I was working narcotics, the big problem was cocaine. Methamphetamine really just started to come on a little bit, and heroin lasted maybe 6 months and then it went away. And so the issues that everybody is seeing now is like a tidal wave, really.
Wow. What are the prescription drugs that are opioids that often lead to a person being addicted?
The most common are hydrocodone, Vicodin, oxycodone, Percocet. Those are the two that are most prominently prescribed, but there's a whole variety of them.
And I think it was you, Doctor, who mentioned earlier in this program that part of the problem with this is that it became there was a change in philosophy with regard to pain management in the medical profession several years ago. I think before that change in philosophy, doctors didn't deal with pain. They kind of let you live with it. I'm putting words in your mouth, and you can set me straight here. But then it was decided that if somebody has pain, we should give them relief.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's led to this?
It has contributed to it, absolutely. Again, in the late 80s, there was recognition that we were under-treating pain. It was all over the media. I have a bunch of different magazine covers that identify that, Time Magazine, Newsweek, the big magazines. And with these terrible looks of pain that, and then descriptions within the magazines that are identifying that we were not paying attention to pain well enough and allowing people to suffer, which causes a lot of problems in society when people can't get to work or can't do things. And so, again, there was a big push to be treating that, including around the year 2000, there was the Joint Commission, which is the group that inspects hospitals and other hospital-associated clinics around the country, said that everyone coming into the clinic had to be asked about their pain, potential pain, and if they said it was greater than a 4, and if you have a toothache, as far as you're concerned, it's terrible, and we then needed to have some recognition in our treatment plan that we were doing something about it.
But there are other pain relief medication protocols other than simply opioids, aren't
right.
they? Why did we gravitate toward those? Because they are the strongest, most effective, quickest acting?
That's correct. But also, which Paul brought up, there's been some, recognition that the pharmaceutical companies had something to do with this also. And at the time, actually, there were some researchers in pain that stated that if you gave an opioid for pain, that your potential for actually developing an addiction or, an opiate use disorder was minimal, that we rarely ever saw that. And what we've learned subsequent to that, and many of these researchers have now come out saying that they were wrong, is that clearly, as I said, it has a lot to do with both the genetic predisposition, the family of origin, obviously the environment, social economic problems that
But also it has a lot to do with, I think, something that you talked about last time you were on this program, in that these drugs are supposed to be used for a highly specified short period of time, 4 or 5 days maybe.
That's right.
And yet there are enough pills in the jar to go for a month or more, and they have been easily refilled, and sometimes people were going to multiple doctors and no one was checking,
right.
So they had a veritable pharmacy of these things right. in their medicine cabinet.
Right, and that's part of what the governor mentioned, and he didn't name it the STOP Act, but that really is was put in place, was profited by Josh Stein, the Attorney General. It was really his push to try to dictate or look very closely at how many opioids a physician could prescribe at specific times. So it was whether they were in the emergency room or leaving the hospital before they would have follow-up to see how they were doing, if there was a reduction in pain, because opioids are prescribed for a specific problem. And I think that this is one public message I would put out, is that if you don't use all your opioids for the problem that they were prescribed, to use them for anything else in your household is illegal. To certainly give them to a child or a neighbor, I mean, keeping them in some way thinking, and I've done this, in the past, in the 90s, I'd have an opiate in the house and I'd say, well, keep it just in case somebody gets hurt or there's a problem. You cannot do that. That is illegal.
What are you supposed to do with it?
You should. We have various ways around the city to dispose of controlled substances, and there's within some of the police departments, some of the drug stores are involved in this effort, and the state is very much involved in trying to get unused opioids out of the medicine cabinet.
So what this has done, now that we've changed the laws about how these things are prescribed, people run out of their prescriptions, and they have now turned to heroin and street drugs, fentanyl, to take care of what is an addiction, which they may or may not recognize in themselves, but it's a hard thing to kick, as the governor mentioned. It's very painful to extract yourself from this addiction. And you mentioned, Paul Fushi, that fentanyl is a completely manufactured, man-made substance. What is it?
Well, it's formed of analogs. First, only about 4% of the legitimate fentanyl is only found about in 4% of overdose cases. Almost all your overdoses involving fentanyl will involve man-made, whether it comes from China, processed in China or Mexico. And it's adulterated and entered into the drug for a greater high. So basically, it's like morphine. It's just a man-made morphine. The fentanyl is a scheduled drug. It's just what they learned is they can use analogs, and sometimes it's harder for laws to catch up with the analogs of fentanyl. And that's what the governor's the act that just passed is any analogs that are made, which you use for fentanyl, are now illegal, which makes it easier to prosecute. And it's far more, 50 to 100 times more potent than heroin.
So what is Charlotte's approach to this? I only have a minute left in this segment. Yep. What's if you find somebody and you, how do you recognize that it's a fentanyl or an opioid addiction, and what's your approach?
You don't. Most people, it's not a fentanyl addiction. Most people don't take fentanyl purposely. It's slid into whether it's heroin or cocaine. So I guess we need to be careful to verify that. Very few people take fentanyl on purpose. It's put into whether it's cocaine or heroin, it's put in to make it stronger, because the seller is trying to make his product as good as it can for the users. And the thing with fentanyl is I just talked to a guy just the other day. Once they use it, boom, they're out immediately. There's no process of like, oh, I'm not feeling good, I'm going down. It's an immediate response with fentanyl.
Wow. We'll come back and talk about Charlotte's response and about this Project Hope that's going on, or a Hope initiative that's going on within the Nashville Police Department out in Nashville, North Carolina, in a moment. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Hefner Financial of Charlotte. Jim Hefner is an independent fiduciary financial planner whose team specializes in retirement solutions and tax strategies. Information at youlljustknow.com. And NC Warren, presenting Clean Path 2025, a strategy to slow climate change, save money, and create jobs with local solar power and battery storage. ncwarren.org. Well, as recovery and rebuilding gets underway on the Texas Gulf Coast, there are calls for a New Deal-type program that goes beyond getting things back to normal. Proponents say it should tackle poverty and address climate change, and that will be the topic of the conversation coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on Point. And we are coming right back.
If you want to understand this world, just follow the money.
Chicken is a big business. We are a chicken nation. In terms of a whitewater year, this is going to rank in the top five.
The running joke in Hollywood is that no movies ever make money.
Oil, of course, is the lifeblood of modern civilization.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Stories from all over the economy next time on Marketplace.
This evening at 6:30 on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the opioid addiction problem in North Carolina and around the country, actually, with Thomas Pishore, who's the chief of police of the Nashville, North Carolina Police Department. We're going to talk about the HOPE initiative they have put into place down there. Detective Paul Fushi is with Vice and Narcotics at CMPD, and Dr. Stephen Wyatt's medical director of Carolina's healthcare system. And you want to clarify exactly what fentanyl is, and the fact that it is, in the medical community and the pharmaceutical community, a legitimate drug. Maybe what you're buying on the street isn't accurately dosed, but it's a legitimate drug that's used for how? How do you use it?
So fentanyl has been used in anesthesia for years. There are even more powerful fentanyls, sufentanyl, medications that can, it's being used this morning all over the country in anesthesia. We can give the medicine, it blocks pain immediately. We're able, in emergency rooms or in operating theaters, it's hugely effective, and it's important for the community to know that if they get fentanyl once under those conditions, they're not going to be addicted, and they are in a controlled setting. But like Paul says, if you give it, you need to be prepared to intubate the person right now if you haven't already intubated them by giving other medicines. So these are hugely powerful, very effective, and very important medications that we have. They are synthetic opioids. That is, they are not made from the poppy plant. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's another thing to keep in mind, and that's what we're seeing coming in from China, because you can make it in the laboratory very inexpensively. You can; it doesn't smell. It can be sent through the U.S. mail. As Paul said, there's multiple analogs, so they can change the chemical composition slightly, and then we don't have it on the books as illegal, and then it's a problem. But we're addressing that.
And of course, what you buy on the street, you have no control over how it was manufactured, what the actual dosage is, and fentanyl can be instantly death. It can cause death almost instantly if it's way too strong.
Well, and add to that, most of the not to take up for the dealer, but most dealers aren't out to kill their clients.
Of course not.
But they can't properly dose fentanyl. They don't have the tools to properly dose fentanyl in a package.
So let me hear from the two law enforcement officers, and I'll take it to Chief Bashore for a second here. What's the approach now? Because it's very difficult to identify whether a person is addicted to heroin or an opioid or to something else, and they're on the street and they've been arrested, or they have it in their possession, or it's clear that they have taken it. What's the approach now if we know we can't arrest our way out of this problem?
So I think from a law enforcement perspective, we kind of are looking at attacking the problem in three different areas, as opposed to just one of arrest and put people in jail and hope for the best. Obviously, we still have to go after the suppliers and those individuals that are selling opiates and other drugs. Then we have to look at prevention as a huge piece. The governor indicated that's, we don't want to have to treat individuals and attack the dealers and not worry about the backfill that's going to happen with those kids that are 11 and 12 and 13 years old now. And then from a treatment perspective, the law enforcement approach across the country now that has picked up over the last couple of years is to try to find those individuals treatment for their substance use disorder.
What is Charlotte's procedure?
Charlotte's been very heavy in the school system for years as far as targeting heroin, and we've been fairly successful with the statistics. Our younger people aren't the problem. If you look at it age-wise, is from anywhere from 25 to 35 to 40. That's the problem area. Our goal is to limit the exposure at early ages. It's very difficult because heroin is different than other drugs And this is important because it's physically and emotionally addictive. And by it being physically addictive, they need it once they get exposed to it for any, you know, a number of uses. They'll start to develop a tolerance and need it. So we have really tried to attach it at the youth level. For the older people, just like what the chief said, we encourage them to get into treatment. And sometimes the only way a offender or a user can get help is he's got to be forced into it. It's hard when you're physically addicted to something to voluntarily go in for treatment. Yeah. And we have to realize that people will try and fail and try and fail. We have to understand that. That's okay. That's going to happen.
The Nashville Police Department implemented the HOPE initiative for individuals who want help. And do they come to you because they want help, or are they put in the program because somebody realizes they need help?
Yes, so we started our program back in February of 2016, and it's a voluntary program where individuals can come into the police department. It doesn't matter what their drug of choice is. We use those same resources that we have established to get individuals into treatment if that's what they want. And so there are many times where individuals have gotten to a point in their life where they realize they have no other choice but to seek treatment. Many times they're encouraged by family members, and so they voluntarily come into the police department to get our help.
How difficult was it to gain their trust, given the way law enforcement has approached this in the past, where if you're found in possession or you're selling it or you're using it, you're going to jail? How difficult was it to gain trust?
Yeah, it is a little counterintuitive for individuals that have substance use disorder to walk into a police department when their previous engagements with law enforcement has usually resulted in a set of handcuffs. But I think that one of the things that we did here was establish a trust and rapport with individuals as they came into the program. And individuals who have a substance use disorder, that's a pretty tight-knit community in itself. And so when you have the first one or the first couple that come in and they realize that it's not a trick, you weren't trying to find out who their dealers were or, you know, how much they bought or where they bought it from, and that you were truly trying to get them into treatment and to become productive citizens again, that word spreads, and that's how you end up building that community trust.
So how does it work? I come to you, I have a problem, I admit my problem to an officer at the desk at the police department. What happens next?
So we do a short intake with them, and then we take them over to the emergency department at UNC Nash General here in Rocky Mount. We get them evaluated. There's blood work done. There's labs done. And then they get a behavioral health assessment. And then when they meet criteria for a detox, we get them into the detox facility, and then we work with them while they're in the detox facility for treatment after that, whether that's an individual outpatient program or whether that's a residential treatment program for their long-term recovery.
Do we have something similar in operation here in Charlotte?
Normally, when we first started, he's right, it's a very close-knit community, but our community's not as close-knit now only because we're a regional hub for heroin traffic. You know, so we send heroin comes in here and it's dispersed. So we have a far greater numbers. We have a large number of clinics that help people, that assist people with needs and that type thing. So we have been proactive in that way, but it's just too. I think we have 170 overdoses so far this year where people have lived. I referred to the deaths earlier. So it's an extensive problem and not as close-knit right as, say, it is in Asheville. So it's a little bit more problematic.
How would you assess the efficacy, Chief, of what you've been doing for since about a year and a half now?
So for the past 18 months now, we have had over 200 people that have come through the police department's HOPE Initiative program, and we have placed 100% of those individuals into residential treatment programs if that's what they so desire. That's probably around 120 of those. The vast majority of those, do not have insurance, and so the HOPE Initiative will help cover the costs for their treatment if that's what they desire.
Who pays for this, by the way?
Yeah, so that's always a good question. There's no ad valorem tax that's used to fund the program. No tax dollars are used to fund the program at all. It's all done through small grants, fundraisers, and donations for the program.
Wow. How difficult is this a drug to get yourself off of? How difficult? What's the recovery process like?
Well, the drug is very difficult to come off of because it usually gets to a point with individuals where they're not using the drug anymore just to get high or have a euphoric feeling. It's to prevent them from getting sick. And so when you stop using, especially an opiate, after about 2 or 3 days, your body starts going through some pretty nasty withdrawal symptoms. And so that's why they maintain the use of the drug. And so the process really is that a medical detox for an individual lasts anywhere from 4 to 10 days. The average is right around 5 or 6. And then you get over the initial symptoms of the withdrawal. Although there'll still be issues there for you to deal with, it just gets easier and easier.
In a clinical setting, Dr. Wyatt, are there drugs that are administered to offset the withdrawal pains?
That's correct. So the chief is right on in terms of the time that it takes people to get off, and we do it in a controlled setting. Opiates, people don't die from opiate withdrawal like they might from alcohol or benzodiazepines. So we can actually treat opiate withdrawal on an outpatient basis. Many times it's done inpatient. But then people need to understand that about 90% of people that go through an acute withdrawal, that is, they think that the drive for their continued use of drug is because they're going to get sick. But we can get people through withdrawal very nicely, but about 90% in the first year after withdrawal, people are going to relapse. And it's the use of methadone, so opiate treatment programs that can be very helpful. Buprenorphine, I've spoken about that on this show before, but that's office-based opiate treatment. That's something that doctors can prescribe in the office and now nurse practitioners. And then lastly, naltrexone, which is an opiate antagonist that can block it. So using medications can give people an opportunity to downregulate most of the craving that they're experiencing and start to rebuild their lives in a way that they don't have this constant drive. It's profound. It's seen in all substance use disorders. So it's seen in alcohol and cigarettes and, you know, but it's profound in opiates.
So let me ask you the same question I asked Chief Beshore. This sounds expensive. Who pays for this? Because I know the governor, we didn't have a chance to talk about this when he was on, but the governor is advocating that more people have health insurance. That would help pay for this. And that he would like to see an expansion of Medicaid. The commission that he's on, the President's Commission on Combating Drug Addiction and the Opioid Crisis, has recommended the expansion of Medicaid for this very reason. In the absence of having health insurance and the absence of expanding Medicaid, who pays for this?
That's a huge problem, and there are many people that have no access to treatment whatsoever.
If an addict comes in off the street and stumbles into CMC and says, "I need help," nothing?
No, there are places in the county. We have Anuvia, which is the county driven program, but at the same time, it doesn't have access to medications in the way that patients really need to be able to maintain their recovery a long period of time. And that's not to say, I did say 90%. There's 10% that can get off the drug and do well, but it's very rare. And to put your efforts behind the use of medications to just help stabilize. But at the same time, clearly people need to be doing work in changing their lives.
The President's Commission is recommending that the President declare this a national emergency. Evidently, that frees up some money. But there are lots of we have 28 active national emergency declarations underway right now, which focus on activities in other countries, including Zimbabwe, Venezuela, the Balkans, Belarus, the 1979 Iranian hostage crisis national emergency is still active. None of the national emergencies that are active deal with public health. Would this be a first?
Yes, it would, and it would be pretty phenomenal if we could have that level of support. Congress did enact the 21st Century Cures Act near the end of last year, and it was actually appropriated since the Trump administration took over, which is going to bring around $15 million into the state, and the hope is that much of that money is going to be put towards treatment.
Given this change in attitude about law enforcement's approach to this problem, this drug problem, are they being given the tools, or are their hands tied by laws on the books and courts that say, I have to do this because it says I have to give somebody with possession X number of years in jail?
Our job is very specific in that we conduct investigations and we take the best product to the district attorney. Laws have been on the books that are very good. I think the one where that is encouraged, if your buddy has overdosed and you will call someone to come help him and you have a gram of heroin, you're still going to call because we're not going to lock you up for that.
That's the naloxone.
Yeah. No. What we found was that people were overdosing in groups, and this has really encouraged people to call to help their people. That's not the naloxone.
With that, we're out of time, I'm sorry to say. Dr. Detective Paul Fushi, Vice and Narcotics at CMPD, Chief of Police of Nashville, North Carolina, Thomas Beshear, and Dr. Stephen Wyatt from Carolina's healthcare system. Later this month, we will devote an hour to the treatment side of this conversation. But thank you all for the hour, and thanks to the governor for joining us earlier in the program.